Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Republican New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. He's from the 120th District. He's been on this program for a while now, and we really appreciate you joining us, and we welcome you back for another round.
Well, David, thanks so much for having me on, and I want to say congratulations to you for taking over the Capital Connection, but also say congratulations to your predecessor, Alan Shartok, who is a legend, as you know, in Albany and around politics. And you have big shoes to fill, but I'm sure you're up for the job.
Well, they are. And I would never, ever think of filling those shoes as Alan, but certainly with his tutelage over the years and the 30 plus years we spent together like an old married couple, I can finish his sentences. And certainly we both understand the power of public broadcasting and the need to educate New York citizens on our state government. And that certainly involves you. I do want to make a comment that I thought it was really, really wonderful to see that the state legislature honored Alan for all his work over the years.
Yeah, that was really something, and it was a bipartisan resolution, at least I saw in the assembly. I apologize, Alan, if you're listening. I was out of the Capitol, so I wasn't able to speak on the resolution, but my sentiments were certainly there, as they were with my colleagues, bipartisan colleagues, both Republicans and Democrats, expressed the impact that Alan had on them and on politics and government in general.
Yeah, and largely through this program. And hopefully that is a clarion call to those in the state legislature, in the agencies of government, good government groups and others, to reach out to us. We want to hear from you. We want you to tell us about what you're doing when it comes to New York state government and politics, so the citizens of New York can be better educated and can make those better decisions when it comes to voting and other issues with government.
I really appreciate that, David, because one of the challenges we have in the minority, obviously we don't have the votes to pass legislation. We have to work in a bipartisan manner. But one thing we do have is a bully pulpit, and we do like to point out where we think the majority has gone astray or implementing poor public policy. And the fact that you're willing to give us a platform for that, I think is good for government. I think it's good for politics, and I think it's good for New York. So I really appreciate, you know, you having me on the show, and before you, Alan, having me on the show and being able to express my opinions. I think it's incredibly important. So thank you for that.
And I think it also speaks, don't you, Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, to the idea that we've become so divided in politics that a program like this, where we can come together and have reasonable conversations about issues that we may not agree on necessarily, but we can certainly discuss them and come to some sort of cooperative effort as a result.
Absolutely. I wish there was more programs like that. There's no doubt. And even I find myself from time to time getting caught up in the partisan game. You have to kind of pull yourself back and understand that your people that may think differently aren't necessarily your mortal enemies. They just have a different perspective on things, and that's okay. So anyway, long short of it, thank you for doing it. And I think more discussion and dialogue we can have, the better it is.
Enough said. Well, let's have a little conversation now. And I thought I'd start here because I talk to folks from all around New York State. Your district's the 120th district. That's running from, what, Sterling and Fulton in the western part there, east to Oneida Lake, and then north up until, like, Adams Center. You're almost near, what, Sackett's Harbor up there. So a lot of your district is bordering water, isn't it?
It is, Lake Ontario. So I have all of Oswego County that obviously borders, and then I go up to Jefferson County. have some towns up there that border Lake Ontario than Cuda County. So that's very correct. You could call my district, to some extent, a lake district.
So because of that, what unique issues, opportunities, challenges does that present in a district like yours?
Well, one thing I've said, not just with my district, but I think all of New York State, is from a geographic perspective, we have some of the most beautiful land, I guess, in the country, because you can go from Long Island with the beautiful beaches and wineries out there. Obviously, we have New York City, come up the Hudson Valley with a beautiful trip, either on the train or by car. You come up and see the beautiful river, and then you get further up and into the Adirondacks, and you come down where I am, Lake Ontario, and the Finger Lakes, and obviously go out towards Buffalo, you have Niagara Falls. And so it's really a very diverse state geographically. And in my district, one of the things we're very reliant on is tourism, because we have one, beautiful landscapes, but also we have a great fishing industry with Lake Ontario and with the Salmon River, for that matter. And so that's one thing that we're trying to encourage in my district, but I think we ought to be doing it throughout New York State, because we have a lot to be very proud of in that regard. So that's just one example of many of the great things about New York State, and maybe more specifically about my district.
And we are talking with Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay. He's a Republican, again, from the 120th District. Well, the end of the session is nigh, and clean slate and election bills were making most of the news through the last days of the session. You're coming back. That is, the Assembly is coming back next week. Any sense of what you'll be voting on?
Yes. First of all, there's a lot of stuff that wasn't done. I think most of the major issues, as you said, clean slate, some of the election law changes, that reparation commission, that's all been passed through. But I think we have a substantial amount of local laws. The local laws are bills that affect each legislator's local district that still need state approval. So that's something we have to get passed. The other big thing that I think is still out there is the Seneca Indian Compact, which we have to give the governor the ability to negotiate with the Seneca Indians over casino revenue and possible expansion of the casino. So that will be probably the most, I don't know if you call it controversial, but the most, probably the biggest issue on the table when we come back.
All right. Well, let's take up each of those that you mentioned first. Let's talk about clean slate legislation. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has not yet said whether she will sign a measure that will seal some criminal records after a person convicted of a crime has served their time. The bill has been proposed for several years and was passed by the Democratic-led state legislature. And in Buffalo on Monday, the governor said the measure is closer to what she had asked for before. So first, Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, do you support clean slate? And what's your sense of whether the governor will sign it or not?
Well, I thought I'm pleased to hear the governor is noncommittal on that at this point, because I thought there was an agreement between the legislature and the governor. So I hope maybe what was passed wasn't actually an agreed upon bill, because I'd like to see her veto it. I don't have any problems, and I don't think anyone in the Republican conference and the assembly has a problem giving second chances. But as we often do in Albany, as we take things too far. And albeit this piece of legislation that was passed is not as bad as some of the earlier proposals, which they gave a clean slate for any criminal convictions, including A1 felonies, which, you know, include murder, which seemed a bit extreme to me. But I still think it's too expansive. And it's one thing to give people second chances, another thing about to provide public safety. And I think there's certain categories of crime that the public has a right to know. And, you know, the great example I always use is if someone has a DWI and they're applying, or multiple DWIs, and they're applying for, you know, to be a bus driver or to be involved in transportation, I think the employer should be able to find that out within a background check. So there's certain crimes, or if you're, you know, robbed three banks, if you're trying to get a job in the financial industry, that's probably not the greatest thing. And so I think there's a right for the public to know. But ultimately, David, I think what this shows is kind of the lack of direction that we've had in New York State about trying to solve some of the crime problems. And instead of maybe pushing back and instituting laws that penalize criminals and protect the victims, we seem to be going in the opposite direction. And, you know, my mind would policies like bail reform and raise the age, and as I said, the anti-police narrative. As a result, I think we've seen crime rates go up. And not one is responsible for the increase in crime, but you take it all as a whole, I think it has resulted in increased crime. And this clean slate just seems to be continuing going down that path.
As an outsider looking in, I wonder what you think of this assessment. It kind of seems like the governor, Hochul, is in the middle between the more progressive side of her party, the Democratic Party, and your Republican Party. So, in other words, on this clean slate, she's maybe not as progressive-minded when it comes to what the progressives in the Senate and especially the Assembly want, but often is a little bit more centrist and a little bit to the left of what the Republicans, what your party wants.
Right. Well, I hope that's the case. I mean, she's a governor. She has to represent all the interests in the state. I would note with this clean slate, really the only region of the state where it got a majority of the vote from the legislature was New York City. The majority of the legislators from Long Island, the majority of the members from upstate voted against clean slate. It wasn't, you know, for Albany standards, it was a close vote, too. It wasn't, you know, just Republicans voting against and Democrats voting yes. There are a number of Democrats that represent those areas also opposed. So, you know, I hope the governor hears a lot of New Yorkers who are concerned about this legislation. Again, I think it's good news that she's been noncommittal as far as signing the bill and maybe still veto it.
Another area I wanted to get your opinion on, Will Barclay, minority leader of the state assembly, is the housing proposals. There were dueling ones. One came much before the other. It was Governor Hochul's housing plan. She wanted 800,000 units. It ran into zoning law issues. It was knocked down in negotiations. And then at the very end of the session comes the Assembly and Senate with their own plan. And the governor and lawmakers are sort of pointing fingers back and forth at each other. The governor says she's still looking at all options. And of course, I think everyone is in agreement that there's a housing crisis in New York. Where are you on all of this?
Well, I guess I'm pleased that nothing came of either proposals. I don't disagree that we could do better at housing on the state, but I've always said it, to try to mandate, as the governor was doing, certain housing built in certain locations, I don't think is always the best policy. And then the legislators' plans of, I think, good cause eviction and other policies where they give a lot of the power to the tenants and take the legal abilities away from landlords, I think it's also problematic. Ultimately, I believe we ought to be taking regulations away to encourage private development of housing. That's the best way to encourage more housing. If we take some of the, you know, it's very hard to do any development in New York State because of regulatory zoning, et cetera, concerns. And we should address those, some of them on the local level, but also some of the stuff on the state level to encourage more private development.
Obviously, I'm sure if you had a magic wand, you'd do this. But is there something to be said for citizens should have a basic right to shelter?
Well, I don't know what that means. I think we should always try to help our fellow citizens when they're in need. Trying to institute a constitutional right seems to always get overly broad and people interpret that a different way. And it doesn't always work out the best way that it should. So, yes, if my fellow citizens in need of a place to stay, I think we ought to try to, as a state, provide that need. But to try to enshrine that in some sort of constitutional right, I think is usually overly broad and dangerous.
Well, let's go to another issue where people are in need and are seeking shelter and asylum, and that is the asylum seekers, the migrants we've seen sent upstate from New York City. There's been some backlash there. Some of the upstate counties have passed, you know, states of emergency and trying to stop hotels and motels from taking any migrants that show up. It seems to break down by party, but not on all cases, certainly not in Orange County. But your thought from your perspective, Will Barclay, on this migrant situation and what we're going to do. I mean, we certainly are seeing more and more of them, and we know that there are some jobs out there that a lot of these folks might be able to fill.
Well, yeah, that's one way maybe to look at it. You know, I'm not against immigration, but I'm certainly against illegal immigration, and I think it ought to be legalized. And, it should be done through legal means, excuse me. And I just think it's a complete failure by the federal government. We've been screwing around with immigration over the last, you know, at least 4 years, and they don't seem to have the system right. You have a lot of political rhetoric, I believe, coming from places like New York City and other urban areas. And, you know, I guess even New York State wanted to become a sanctuary a state or a New York City or a sanctuary city. But then when push comes to shove, they realize that we don't have the infrastructure to handle the influx of the migrants. And so what's their solution is to ship them upstate, where I don't know why anyone thinks upstate has the infrastructure to handle that increase in migrant coming upstate. So, you know, this has just been a failure, really, I think, by the federal government. But unfortunately, even the state, we probably could have done more, at least to provide some sort of direction of what we want to do and have state resources available for that, instead of just, you know, it seems somewhat arbitrary shipping upstate, displacing people in various hotels and then trying to put migrants in that place. It just seems just poor planning. And I was disappointed we didn't see anything done at the end of session to try to address this issue. Interestingly, the one thing we did do in New York State is in the budget, we put $1 billion in to try to address the situation. But the $1 billion don't have any kind of strings or any kind of plan attached to it. In fact, we don't even really have a knowledge of how that money is being spent to try to ease a migrant crisis. And so I think that's problematic. We actually have legislation that would require the controller to report back to the legislature how that money is being spent. But it doesn't seem like there's any plan. It just seems like sort of arbitrarily, you know, migrants are being set upstate. You know, it's not good for anybody in that situation. And I chalk it up as a failure of both federal government and state government in this regard.
Yeah, and on the federal level, I was just about to go there to the federal level. It seems like it's just used as kind of a political football, right? Both parties blaming each other for things, especially at least through the Trump administration. It was, you know, the migration, especially from the southern border, was used to at least seems to create fear among the populace of the folks that might be coming over the border. So it becomes very political, and it's really hard to reach a reasonable compromise.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. But I'm just saying, you know, stoking fear, maybe there's a part of that. But I do think it's a broken system. I do think there's dangers with just having an open border. Again, that's why I get back to the fact that if we want to have immigration, we ought to have a system set up to allow legal immigration, which I think in a lot of ways is going to be very beneficial from a demographic standpoint for the country and for New York. But just to have people come into the country and then having them shipped around the country without any kind of notice to the localities, without any kind of system to know who's where, I think, again, is very dangerous. And, you know, I think the blame is a lot on politics. And right now, you can criticize the Trump administration, but he's not the president right now. And you have President Biden, who doesn't seem like he's willing to address this situation in the appropriate way.
No question about it, Will. And he's even continued much of the Trump administration's policies before him. It is a problem that both parties don't seem to be able to solve. And what I worry about, quite frankly, is the people who get hurt the most in all of this, the children.
Yeah, very tragic, without a doubt.
Well, let's turn to another subject, and that's elections and the issue of public campaign finance. You referenced it when you were talking about the end of session, Will Barkley, and we are speaking with the Republican minority leader of the New York State Assembly. And, Will, the issue of public campaign financing, there's a system set up in New York City. I know New York lawmakers approved a measure to alter the state's fledgling public campaign finance. It's change that critics are saying, and even some legislators, undermines the original purpose of the program, which is to encourage small donors to have more of a voice in campaigns. What's your sense of all this? Shouldn't the little guy have more of a chance to get involved in politics?
Well, I'm against public financing in any manner. So the change, which is problematic, I just think with one party rule, they woke up and realized that maybe this, the law that they enacted, the Democrats enacted a couple of years ago, is going to make it difficult, more difficult for incumbents. So they changed it, and where, as you know, I think the matching fund is up to 250, but if you get more money from a donor, you can still take matching funds on that first $250. Why, in my mind, is the taxpayers paying for any politicians to run for office? I never want to see my tax dollars being used to help a Democrat. I'm sure a Democrat doesn't want to see their tax dollars being used to help a Republican win. I'm not convinced that we should look at New York City as a model of how to, you know, take money out of politics. It doesn't seem like they have great government running in New York City. Why do we think that expanding that onto the state level is going to be any better? I just see this as welfare for politicians. And I think all the problems and all the complication that's coming with campaign finance, right now the best policy would be just to scrap it and let politicians and elected officials worry about how they're going to get elected. Let the party worry about how they're going to get their people elected, whether it's Republican or Democrat. So I see more problems on the horizon with this legislation. And ultimately, the Democrats are in the majority. Their interest is to make sure that they continue in on the majority, and they're going to tweak the campaign finance laws any way they can in order to ensure that. And I just think it's wholly the wrong way to go. And I know my conference feels very strongly about that. By the way, the one thing, interestingly, it was predicted at first it was going to cost about $100 million. Now, estimates that it could be much more of that. We only budgeted $25 million in the budget for this. I believe this piece of legislation says, well, if there's a shortfall in the program, we'll let the controller somehow find money somewhere in one of the state's accounts and to fill it in. So we're not even getting a fair assessment on how much this public financing is going to cost.
All right. We'll say that's stipulated, Will Barclay, that we don't need to spend that money there. Well, so then let me give you this example. You've got a young person, someone maybe who is not well-heeled, and they don't have money to run, and they want to run for governor. They want to run for a statewide office or even a local office, state assembly seat or Senate seat, and they don't have the money. It costs a lot of money to run for office. How can we get people who don't have the means into politics and into elections?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways. And I can point to a number of people who run for office that don't have a lot of means, probably don't have the same connections to raise money. But first way to do it is get involved on the local level. And that happens all the time. And then people get to know them. They know they do a good job. And then they run on a higher level. The other thing is, even though individuals may not have the abilities to raise money or, they're not self-funding, certainly the parties have the ability to raise money. And, there's a lot of problems with the party structure, but there's also a lot of advantages to that. And ultimately, the party's interest is getting, in a Democratic perspective, is getting more Democratic candidates elected, and the Republican Party's interest is getting more Republicans elected. So there's other vehicles there for doing it. But when you get the government deciding to give money to the electeds, I have trouble putting my head around why would me as a taxpayer want my tax dollars going to help Democrats win elections. It seems like that's an area that the government wholly should not be involved in.
Well, I have to ask you about this. I know I have to ask you about this, but the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, has pleaded not guilty to federal charges alleging he hoarded classified documents detailing sensitive military secrets and schemed to thwart government efforts to get them back. He appeared before a judge in Miami this week. This is unprecedented. You've got a president who is already under investigation in New York, potentially another one in Georgia. Jack Smith, who's on this investigation, also has the attack on the Capitol investigation. So this president appears to be in a lot of trouble, and yet many question whether he'll get out of this, too.
Well, let me start by saying this, David. Thank you for asking that question, because I know Alan would ask me that question, so I'm glad you're continuing on in that tradition.
Of course, of course.
So I appreciate that. But again, I'm on the state level. This is more of a national news story, but this is my take on it. I think you have to be very careful when you're prosecuting anything that has a political impression on it. So if the Justice Department was going after, take a U.S. senator or someone where the claim can be made that there's political motivations against the prosecution, I think they have to be very careful on what they're doing. It has to be a big case. It has to be a serious charge. And I think the facts need to be very clear if that's the case. Of course, no one's above the law, but charging someone, particularly in the Trump's case, which, certainly the Alvin Bragg case seems a bit spacious, you could say this, again, is problematic. But at the same time, you've had, Hillary Clinton, even at Biden, you have Pence, others being accused of similar types of crime and not being prosecuted, it does, in my mind, smell of political prosecution. And I just think that is very dangerous for the Justice Department because it just undercuts already a department that is under fire for their legitimacy and some of the other claims, the FBI, you know, particularly the Russia gate, I guess you'd call it. And so I think this continuation is very dangerous and it will cause the legitimacy of the Justice Department to be undermined. Regardless of whether Trump's guilty or not of the crime, because others of similar crimes have not been prosecuted. And I think that's where the real problem lies.
So it seems to me, based on what you're saying, that this actually is helping Trump. It's solidifying his base. We're rallying behind him.
Right. Well, certainly that claim can be made. We'll see where things go. But people even claim that's part of the motivation. I'm not sure that's quite the case. But yeah, people do think he's been unfairly attacked. And I think there's some legitimacy to that claim.
Are we in danger? And this is a general question. We're going to move on from former President Trump. But aren't we in danger? I see this all around me now that so many citizens have lost faith in many of our institutions, institutions of government, the institution of justice, our healthcare system, go on and on and on.
Without a doubt. And that worries me very much. I think sometimes politics gets involved in everything. And as a result, maybe policies are pushed that maybe aren't necessarily in the best interest of the people. And as a result, when those policies come to light, I think of some of the COVID policies, especially. And look, I'm willing to give anybody the benefit of the doubt when we're going through that COVID pandemic of not knowing where it was going to go and the problems. But it seemed like, you know, you said healthcare, some of our health officials were maybe pushing a narrative that wasn't completely accurate. And as a result, people lost a lot of faith there. You're right, with maybe the prosecution and the Justice Department. So I do think it's very dangerous. And we ought to always try to provide good public policy that's based on sound facts. And I know that's hard to do because facts can be very difficult to obtain. But I think everyone that's elected or anyone that's in a position to make governmental policy ought to use that as a first rule of thumb.
I could go on for another half an hour and another half an hour after that and another one after that, but we can't. We're out of time. I'm sorry. So much more to talk to you about. We've been speaking with Republican New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay from the 120th District. I can't tell you again how much I appreciate you coming on this program, and I look forward to many more conversations to come.
Me too. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on, and again, congratulations to you.
No, thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.